Silver Parky, Shri Bhakti Vedanta Ki, Granthara Shima Bhagavatam Ki, Giriraj Maharaj Ki, Gopremanandi. Okay. So tonight we'll continue chapter 72. What is chapter 72 called? The salvation of the demon. I'm sorry, the slaying of the demon, Jarasandha. And tonight we'll go from text number 22 to the end of the chapter, which is text number 46. Shukadeva Goswami said, from the sound of their voices, their physical stature, and the marks of bowstrings on their forearms, Jarasandha could tell that his guests were of the royal order. He began to think he had seen them somewhere before. Yogi, you like to read the first one?
Yeah. The Acharyas point out that Vasudeva had seen Lord Krishna, Bhimsen and Arjuna, and Draupadi's Swayamvara ceremony. Since they had come begging in the guise of Brahmanas, Jarasandha thought they must be low-class Kshatriyas, as indicated here by the word Rajanya Bandhu.
Any points?
There are 2 points there here. One is from their Kshatriyas have a typical physique. So, and Kshatriyas at that time were very strong, so he could see theirs, and that's one. Second is, one must not act, one must act based on their natural varna or ashram, not act as the car of some other. Then one is generally not, one may be found out eventually.
What does Krishna say in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, that's one of the verses, but he says that better to perform your duty imperfectly than to do the duty of another.
Perfectly. Duty of another perfectly.
Perfectly, yeah. Even if you do it perfectly, better off doing your own duty. So any other points?
The prowess of Jarasandha and Sarvodaya of Krishna, Arjuna and Bhimsen, even though they are disguising, basically they cannot be disguised in such a way. I mean, they will be seen because they are so effulgent and so...
Back then they were very good at disguising themselves. You see in Draupadi's Swayamvara, the Pandavas dressed as Brahmanas. And they sat amongst the Brahmins during the Swayamvara, like that no one recognized that it was the Pandavas. So they're very expert in the art of disguise. It's actually a skill of a Kshatriya. Sometimes, you know, so Lord Ramachandra did that also. He would dress up and then he would go through the city. Kshatriyas will do that. They'll disguise themselves and then go through them to find out what's going on.
The other point is coming around is they were begging in the guise of Brahmanas. So Brahmana is not supposed to eke out his living by begging. A Brahmana should engage in patan and then yajna. And then the other three, the Kshatriyas, then have to take care of them and the Vaishyas. So if the Brahmana start begging, then they will respect the society. And that's partly the reason why Jarasandha is, you know, later on he behaves in, he kind of mocks them in this conversation, as if he does not have respect, and he eventually finds out who they are.
Yeah, well, there's because two of their qualities is that they live on charity, and then they, whatever excess they don't need, then they give that away. So they do go to, we probably wouldn't say beg, but they do go to request charity. Like if you read in the 10th canto earlier on, Krishna would get up in the morning in Dwarka, then he would go out, and then all the brahmanas would come, because they know that's the time when the king is giving charity, and they live on charity, so then they would receive their charity at that time. It's not really beggars, but it's like a social interaction, socially accepted interaction, and that's part of their dharma. That's how a brahmana is supposed to. He goes to charity. Yeah, so it's not really begging, but it's, you know, that's part of the...
So brahmanas contribute to the society majorly, so they have to be maintained. So it's a reciprocation from the others.
Yeah. You should give to brahmanas. Yeah. So this chapter is an interesting chapter. What happened in the first half of the chapter?
He's asking Lord Krishna.
Yeah.
Bhim goes Krishna, Bhim.
Yeah, first half of the chapter, before this. We covered it 2 weeks ago. What happened?
Pandavas are welcoming Krishna.
Yeah, entertaining Krishna, welcoming him. Yeah, Krishna's staying with them. And then Uddhava, at the end of the last chapter, gave the indication how to kill Jarasandha. He devised a plan to kill Jarasandha. So at this point in time, Krishna is in which place?
Indraprastha.
Yeah. Hastinapur is over the river. Hastinapur is they're not actually that far apart. Indraprastha, where it was, is not actually that far from Delhi, from where Hastinapur is. Further across towards Rajasthan. Because it is said when they got there, it was all desert. They said, oh, you can have that. And then it rained, and then the city appeared. It became lush and even more beautiful city than Hastinapur itself. So this was built for the Pandavas. So Krishna's staying there, and now he's going up to visit Jarasandha. Because they were fearful that if they all approached Jarasandha with armies, with the size of his army and everything, it would be very difficult to conquer him. So therefore they devised a plan. And they went dressed as brahmanas, because if they had gone up there as kshatriyas, then it would have been a different situation. They would have been attacked. Because they've gone in disguise as brahmanas, they've entered in. And once they got in, and they said to Jarasandha, and Jarasandha could see as soon as he saw them. Now, these are not brahmanas. They are kshatriyas. They have the callus on their forearm. What does that mean? It's like they have a callus there.
Mark.
Yeah, mark. What's that from?
By most.
Yeah. Their skin is rough. You get calluses, like if you use a hammer all the time or something, or you get like callus, the skin becomes hard. When you chant, most of what you've got there, you've got like a... Have you got that? Sorry, wrong finger. Have you got that from chanting? My finger, you can see there, there's like a bump, you know, from like chanting, from, you know, chanting on beats for many years, then there's like a bump, it's like a callus, which is formed there. So this comes also different places devotees will get. So they're kshatriyas. So they pick up their bow and they bring the arrow back. The arrow slides like that. So just doing that all the time. And they've got like a callus on them. So Jarasandha, he saw. And immediately in his mind, he thought, I don't think they are kshatriya. Sorry. I don't think they are brahmanas. Yeah. They are kshatriya. Also mentions in the Krishna book, they had like a groove in their shoulder. And you throw your chatter over, and then one of the shoulders is exposed. There's like a groove, because they would carry the bow and the string of the bow, so carrying like that. So it's made a divot. So when he was examining them, he said, okay, you say you're brahmanas, but I don't think so. There's signs there which indicate you're not brahmanas. Any other points? So powerful, this Jara Sangha.
This is another example of transcendental fraud, cheating.
Him. Yeah, a demoniac person. He's one of the most powerful chaturis on the planet. Yeah, there was Kamsa, him, Kichaka, Bhima, like, extremely powerful. Bhima was as powerful as 80,000 elephants. And you'll see in this chapter that, you know, they were equal in strength. Mm-hmm. Neither one could defeat the other one. You know, this shows how powerful the Jarasandha was. Not like some ordinary chaturia. And we don't really have chaturias so much now. Chaturia-like people, but real chaturias are kind of hard to find. Still they're there. And they still have chaturia kind of spirit. Does I remember in Mumbai, you know, a few years ago, a terrorist attack. And they got the boats, the Pakistanis. They got on the boat and they went down the river. They came off and they jumped off and they started shooting all the people and they held up hostage in that hotel. Remember that? How long ago? 5 years ago? 10 years ago or something? So the chief commissioner of the Mumbai police, you know, they rang him and they said, you know, terrorist siege. He just got the gun and walked straight in. That's chaturia. Didn't send in all the soldiers or all the police officers. He went in himself. He got killed. But he went in there with the gun to start shooting all the terrorists. Like real chaturia. That's chaturia spirit. Doesn't mean, you know, you hide at the back and wait for everyone else to. You know, when everyone else is dead, then I'll come out. That is not chaturia. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, happy are the chaturias for which our fighting opportunities come, unsought, opening the gateway to the heavenly kingdom. So that's chaturia, chaturia. He likes to fight. Any points? Okay. Jarasandha thought, these are surely members of the royal order dressed as brahmanas, but still I must grant their request for charity, even if they beg me for my own body. Jaikishan, you like to read the purport?
Jarasandha reveals his strong commitment to charity, especially when begged by brahmanas.
Very good. Thank you. Any points?
There are two sides to this charity. One side is Jarasandha's kindness to the brahmanas, in one sense, or his adherence to dharmic principles. The other side is there is a pride also in the heart. Immense pride is there. False pride. And I am a big man, I give charity. His mood is almost there.
Mm.
So his act is very venerable, but his mood is not
the best.
It's as good as, you know, Karna was also there, who gave charity before.
Mm. Yeah, it was instilled within the Vedic culture, the different varnas. They had their duties, and to perform that duty was extremely noble. So we have to really go into their thought process, into their understanding. It's like from birth, they've been trained, and it's been established within their consciousness that you must give charity under all circumstances. You know, it's a different type of training to what we received. You know, I mean, he actually says in a few verses, you can take my head. Like, this was literal. You know, no one says that these days. I was thinking that today while I was studying this. You know, I can't imagine saying to someone, you know, take my head and, you know. But back then, the Kshatriya, the Dharma, was so powerful. Kshatriya Dharma means they will give charity to anyone who is coming to them for protection. Just like the other example in the Mahabharata, Arjuna, the five Pandavas, when they won Draupadi, then Narada was introduced to Draupadi. And when Draupadi left, then Narada said to the five Pandavas, he said, she will cause quarrel amongst you, because all five of you are married. And she's so qualified. It will cause quarrel. So then he said, if you are in private with her, then the others should not enter. If it's just the two of you, then everyone else should stay away. So if she's just with Bhima, the others could not stay. If she's just with Yudhishthira or with Arjuna or Nakula or Sahadev, the others could not come, because otherwise it would cause some problem. So then there was the time that she was with Yudhishthira, and they were in the armory where they keep all the weapons and the armor and so forth. And one brahmana came, and the brahmana said to Arjuna, some dacoits, they have stolen my cows. So Arjuna said, I will immediately go and chastise them, because someone had taken shelter of him. That's Kshatriya Dharma. That's how we understand. If someone's Kshatriya, they will always give shelter, and people will feel sheltered by them, protected by them, and maintained by them. They're so powerful. So he said to the brahmana, I will go and get the cows. But he said, I have to go and get my bow, Gandiva, which is in the armory. So when he came to the door, he understood that Yudhishthira was there with Draupadi. So if he went in, they took a vow that if one entered while the other was with Draupadi privately, they would be exiled for 1 year, which is a big thing, it's a significant thing. But then he thought, I cannot let this brahmana be unprotected. So then he had to weigh up the two. I enter and I get exiled, or I protect the brahmana. So he chose his Kshatriya Dharma, to protect the Dharma. So he went in, he bowed his head, he said, Yudhishthira, please forgive me for transgressing our agreement. Took his bow, went out, killed the dacoits, gave the cows back to the brahmana, and then he came back and he said, now I will go for 1 year. And Yudhishthira said, no, you didn't have to, because this was extraordinary situation. He said, no, we took the vow, we all agreed, I'm going for 1 year. So what did he do? He married a number of people in that year. He traveled. He said he took a group of brahmanas with him. And he just went into the forest, and as they were traveling, they would study and discuss the Shastra. That's what devotees do. If devotees get some time off, they study the Shastra. A lot of the time we don't even get time off, because it's so busy, our lives. When we get some time, then we go away and we just study Shastra. So he took brahmanas with him, they went out, and as they traveled, they were studying and discussing the Shastra. Same as Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. They were running the government from Ram Keli, but they were studying the Bhagavatam. All the brahmanas were there and they were studying the Bhagavatam. They just ran the government from a distance. So that's what devotees will do if they get the opportunity. So it is so inculcated within their consciousness, so deep in their consciousness, that they must take care of anyone who is dependent on them. So it's such a deep Kshatriya spirit. So the Vedic culture is based upon respect for authority. Yeah, that's Vedic culture. Right? You have to respect authority. Guru, parents, brahmanas, like that. Anyone who's in a senior position, you have to offer respect. In the modern culture, that's not so prevalent. Like in this modern world, we don't like to offer respect to authority. It's not natural. It's very difficult for the ego in this day and age to be respectful to authority. And I wish I had been, in this lifetime, had been trained from the beginning of my life to be like that. Because in our experience before we took to Krishna consciousness, it was kind of like we're encouraged to see authorities as equals. Like at my school, we were friends with our teachers. Even on the weekends, sometimes we would go places together. Teachers and students, we would hang out together. So then it wasn't really like an authority situation. I mean, it was to a degree, but on another level, it was equality. So, you know, I wish I had had a different kind of experience training. Because then when you come into ISKCON, then it's much easier to accept authority. But sometimes we struggle with authority because it wasn't there in our culture. You know, for me, it's more natural to kind of see people as equals. And now I have to be like authority. So it's not so natural or easy. So this is the beauty of the Vedic culture, there's respect for authority. And it shows you the selflessness. That they would just give anything. You'll see in the next few verses, Jarasandha, he's willing to give anything for the Brahmana. Just like the pastime is there with Lord Nityananda's father, Hardai Pandit. He gave his son. Right? And then what was the result? Hardai Pandit left his body out of separation from Nityananda Prabhu. So that's the position in the Vedic culture, you give anything to the person. We're not so like that. We don't have that level of surrender. But this is there in their culture. That's why these pastimes there in the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata, to teach us. Just like the example of Gandhari. What happened when she married Dhritarashtra? What did she do? Yeah, she took bandage cloth and she wrapped it up, and she never saw her again. You know, because she didn't want to feel like she's superior to her husband. So why is that example there? It shows us the kind of dedication spouses should have for each other. So dedicated to her husband. Husband so dedicated to the wife. That's what it's showing us. No, we can never imitate that. You know, like my wife was blind and then I said, okay, now I'm just going to wrap her. I could never do it. I don't have that, you know. And I don't think she would do that for me either. But that's what we're taught, the kind of dedication we should have. And then her vision became so powerful. You know, one time she lifted up. No? And then what happened when she lifted up? Who was in front of her? Duryodhana, her eldest son. Then what happened?
Duryodhana's body became
iron. Yeah, his body became like iron, just by her vision. She lifted up the cloth and she looked at him and his whole body became strong like iron. Except for this part. Because he was wearing gamsha. Because he was on the way to visit his mother. And then Krishna said, where are you going? I'm going to visit my mother. Yeah. And he said, he explained to Krishna what was taking place. He said, my mother said, when you stand before me, you must be completely naked. And Krishna said, that is inappropriate. Put a gamsha. So then that part was not touched by her glance. So then he had a weakness. So then later on, Krishna went like that. And then Bhima hit. Smash that part because he couldn't hurt it. He could not hurt him because his body was like that. So, yeah. So all these pastimes show us like higher levels of devotion and character, so we can understand. Any point? Indeed, the spotless glories of Bali Maharaj heard throughout the world. Lord Vishnu, wishing to recover Indra's opulence from Bali, appeared before him in the guise of a Brahmana and made him fall from his powerful position. Though aware of the ruse and forbidden by his guru, Bali, king of the demons, still gave Vishnu the whole earth in charity. So, what is Jarasandha motivated by?
Honor.
Charity, yeah. But what's like his personal motivation?
Honor.
Yeah, honor, yeah. Or fame. Pratishtha. The desire to be recognized. Not just in this life, but on and on and on. Non-devotees, they think like this. And even devotees, we can think like this. That, you know, if I do something, everyone will remember me. My name will go on and on and on, even after I'm dead. But back in this culture, in the Vedic culture, it was very important. And then he starts citing the Shastric examples. Bali Maharaj is remembered for, even now. When did that pastime happen with Bali Maharaj? Bhamana did. How long ago was that? Yes, like millions of years ago. Like millions of years ago. I mean, you know, if we put this into perspective, look at our own life. Do you do anything which people remember? You know, usually if we do something people remember, it's bad. But when was the last time you did something good that people still talk about? Oh, you know, they did that, or they did that, or they did that. And then how many people talk about it? And then will they remember your whole life? And will they remember even after you're gone? And it's rare to be remembered after you're gone. It's actually rare. Most of us will not be remembered when we're gone. It's a rare thing to be remembered when you're not in this world anymore. It's rare, like it's a rare person. You know, Prabhupada. You know, someone like that, that's someone who is remembered. And is going to be remembered for 10,000 years from now. That's a rare person. Someone who's come into this world in this day and age. I mean, back then it was a little easier because people were more into that, remembering. But these days, like, everyone will just forget everyone very quickly. But someone who can be remembered for a long period of time. So what to speak of someone like Bali Maharaj, who has been remembered. I mean, think of it in perspective. Millions of years. This whole pastime with Vamanadev happened millions of years ago, and we are still talking about it. You know, that's an ordinary situation. I mean, it's an extraordinary person who would be like that.
Coming to the charity thing, wouldn't people have used that type of privilege of, you know, I'd give anything to anyone just for, you know, in charity, like even my own head, wouldn't people have used that type of, you know, thing?
In what way?
As in, like, if a Brahmana came up to, like, an emperor of the world, and Brahmana said, I want the whole world, and I want to have control over you, wouldn't that be, like, abusing that type of privilege of...
Yeah, normally, yeah. You mean the pastime of Vamana?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's God.
But would anyone else do that?
You'd have to be pretty extraordinary. You have to be either be Krishna himself or someone very, very exalted.
There was a reading to Maharaj Harishchandra.
What did he do?
Asked him for his kingdom in his dreams. And next morning came and said, I'm going to give you the dream. Kingdom that you gave it to me in the dreams.
Yes, it's very rare that someone will do something like that. But Krishna does things which are not... other people are not capable of doing. You know, you have to be capable first. If you're going to ask for something, then you have to be capable of taking it. You know, taking the whole universe from the emperor, that's, you know... We can't even take one suburb or one street. We don't have very much control. Even one house we can't control. Even one room we cannot control in the house. All right. No side comments. No. We're having a deep conversation.
I'm just thinking about myself.
We don't need your mundane commentaries. So he's driven by pratishta. Pratishta means the desire to be famous. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's the strongest anartha which every devotee has to overcome. Hence our view, desire to be famous. Wow. One honest person. Desire to be famous. No one has a desire to be famous? Yeah, I think you're all deceiving yourselves.
It's wild party.
Yeah, so that's a desire to be famous. Yeah. Now you're qualifying it. I think the reason we're not desiring to be so much famous is because we're not famous. But if you get some taste for it, it becomes very intoxicating. Right? It's a very intoxicating anartha. You know, though I want to be well known. You see, if we get recognized for something, it does something to us, our consciousness. Does anyone understand what I'm talking about here tonight? Two people? That's good. When that happens, we get a little bit of recognition, then it changes our consciousness. You have to see it within yourself. So this is his ambition. This is his motivation. He wants to be famous. And as long as you have that anartha, where will you take birth? Yeah, in the material world. Lord Chaitanya says, Shikshastika, fourth verse. What is fourth verse? Nātanam. Nājanam, nāsundarim, kavitam. So Nātanam. Dāna means? Money. Nādanam. Attachment to money. That keeps you in this world, and it takes your mind away from Krishna. Najanam, jana, means? Yeah, aristocratic birth, yeah. It also means to have followers. Jana, like the jana will follow you. That is the desire to be recognized by others. That's very powerful. Nādanam, nājanam, nā sundarim, kapitam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, sundari means the opposite sex. Kapitam means? Sweet speech of the opposite sex. That bewilders the consciousness. So Lord Chaitanya says, those three things, followers, the opposite sex, and money, they will distract you from devotional service. And that will stop you from getting to the platform of? No, well, I mean, 9 levels of bhakti, then what does it stop you from getting to?
Nishtha.
Yeah, it means Trinadapi Sunichina, that verse, the third verse. If you imbibe that verse, if you actually practice that verse, not expecting respect, always giving respect to others, more humble than grass, more tolerant than a tree, 4 qualities. Which of the 4 is the most important?
Respect.
Right, to always offer respect to others. Right, that's not an easy thing to do. That's a very high level of consciousness. But if you can master those 4, and especially that one, then you get to the platform of Nishtha bhakti. And then when you give up the other 3, the more subtle attachments, then you go to the platform of ruchi. Now these are like gateways. Lord Chaitanya says, you have to do these 4 things. The next verse he says, you have to give up these 3 things. He makes it very simple and very easy for you to go back to Godhead. Now, Krishna gave the Bhagavad Gita how many verses? 700, right? And Lord Chaitanya just gave us 8 verses to make it even easier. Most people haven't even got time to read the Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of the Bhagavata? 18,000 verses. What to speak of the Mahabharata? 118,000 verses. So Lord Chaitanya makes it very easy. Any points?
When you're doing devotional service, when you're doing devotional, when you're in the path of devotional service, this fame that you're talking about as puja, lava, pratishtha, they seem to be following you like a shadow, which is basically, you know, making you think you are basically a very nice devotee, you are doing extremely well and all that. And it's very much similar. Can you please comment on that? Because that actually is something I want to know about.
What do you want to know?
Well, I feel that is what is basically impacting in one sense me.
Yeah, because that's what comes. That's what comes. Like, you know, like, if you want to be a famous soccer player, you want to play for Melbourne, what are they called?
Victory.
Victory, yeah, you want to play for Victory, right? And then, what's the next level up? Then you go to Europe.
European.
Yeah, then you're talking about Manchester and, you know, it's like that. So, when you start getting positions, and same in devotional service, you know, you become a bhakti vriksha leader, or you become a temple president, or you become a guru or a GPC or whatever, you get some recognition, then automatically you become famous. And people offer you things. And they bow down before you, they give you gifts, they give you sweet words, they serve you, give you facility. So then those things, they automatically come in bhakti. But then the trick is, for each devotee, he has to try to not become bewildered by those things. Doesn't mean those things aren't there. They'll be offered, but you do not become bewildered by them. So it's the same test for all of us. We're all going through the same thing to a different degree. Yeah, everyone here gets respected by someone in our community. You know, people offer us respect. Oh, Prabhuji, and, you know, they might give you money or facility or service or praise or like that. Yeah. So then you have to learn to overcome that desire, to be motivated for your service by that. You've got to see that your service is not motivated by that. Right? That, you know, gradually, because we can't say that we're not attached to it, because that's artificial to say that. It's false. But the attachment should be becoming less, that's the point.
Isn't it just natural human nature to enjoy being praised and all?
Prabhupada says that, yeah, it's natural. But it's false because ultimately the praise belongs to Krishna.
I mean, it will still probably linger in the back of your head.
Except when you become a pure devotee like Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada was not keeping the praise. But he would think in his mind, my good fortune and my ability and my success is coming from the blessings of Guru and the Acharyas and ultimately of Krishna. So that's how the devotee thinks. So it's something we all have to work on.
Thank you.
Krishna will help. Krishna will help. If he sees you're trying, you know, I know myself, I try to overcome those things, but I can't, of my own accord, fully overcome them. So then Krishna assists. You know, he will make that happen. But you have to have the desire in your heart. Any other point? Shukadev Goswami continued, thus making up his mind, the generous Jarasandha addressed Krishna, Arjuna and Bhima, O learned Brahmana, choose whatever you wish. I will give it to you, even if it is my own head. Did I miss the verse?
Yeah,
I thought so. What is the use of an unqualified kshatriya who goes on living but fails to gain everlasting glory by working with his perishable body for the benefit of brahmanas? Sukadeva Goswami said, thus making up his mind, the generous Jarasandha addressed Krishna, Arjuna and Bhima, O learned brahmana, O learned brahmanas, choose whatever you wish. I will give it to you, even if it is my own head. The Supreme Lord said, O exalted King, give us battle in the form of a duel, if you think it fitting. We are princes and have come to beg a fight. We have no other request to make of you. Over there is Bhima, son of Prita, and this is his brother Arjuna. Know me to be their eternal cousin, Krishna, your enemy. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus challenged, Magadha Raj laughed out loud and contemptuously said, all right, you fools, I'll give you a fight. Nila Gopa, what do we
do? See, the Vishnu Chakravarti comments that there was some effect in the satisfaction because he thought that his enemies had been humiliated by having to dress like a Brahmana to approach him. Thus, the Acharya understands Jarasandha's mind as follows. O weak ones, forget the botheration of fighting. Why not just accept my head? By dressing yourselves as Brahmana, redeemed charity, you have made your heroism set like the sun. But if somehow you have not lost your courage, I will give you battle. The Acharya finally points out that the goddess of learning intends the praise Amarsito Mandha to read Amarsito Mandha. In other words, Lord Krishna and the Pandavas are among the never foolish. And that is why they choose the best tactic for doing away once and for all with the foolish person.
Any points?
Kshatriya, this one is worth that. Jarasandha understands that. So he is already considering that they have dishonored themselves by begging to me. So they have anyway lost. So there's nothing for me to do. I can give my head and still they have lost.
So in a way he's almost lowered his guard down into a way where he thinks they're begging, so he's already won. So he's obviously lowered his guard down and probably quite less harder in a way. It was inevitable that the Pandavas were going to win anyway.
Yeah, he's going to fight just as hard, but he actually thinks he is more powerful than them. That's the way he thinks in his mind. So this whole situation is called Leela. Leela means it is a pastime of Krishna. Right? Krishna is orchestrating things in such a way that for his pleasure and the pleasure of his devotees. Because even the Lord himself, one of the minor rasas is chivalry, virarasa, right? Which means he likes to compete. That's natural. We all have competitive spirit. Hands up if you like to compete. Three people, very good. Good. Yeah. We like to compete. All of us like to compete. We're all competitive. We like to be better than others, or it's natural. It's the nature of the soul. Why is it the nature of the soul? Because Krishna likes to compete. Krishna likes competition. There's one pastime in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion. It says that Krishna's friend, Sri Dharma, is having a fight with Lord Balaram. And Lord Balaram is fighting with his club. We know how powerful Balaram is. And Sridhar is fighting with a stick. And he's fighting Balaram just with a stick. And Balaram cannot defeat him. And he's only fighting with a stick. So this is the nature, competition. Devotees like to compete. The Lord likes to compete. In the spiritual world, it is there. So when they really want to enjoy that mood, Krishna has to come into this material world. No. That's why the whole pastime is there with Nisringhadev. Giant Vijay had to take those three births. What are the final births?
Shishupala.
Right, first two is? Yeah. And the second is? Ramad and Kumbhakarna, and the third is?
Shishupala.
And they're just about to come up, next few chapters. First to kill Shishupala, then?
Dandavakura.
Where does he kill Dantavakra? In Mathura, just outside the gates of Mathura. First he kills Shishupal, then Shalva, then Dantavakra. So Krishna himself comes to the material world to enjoy this pastime of fighting. And it gives him great pleasure because this battle goes on for how many days? 28. Means a month. Imagine fighting every day for a month. That's how powerful they were. All day for a month, fighting. Krishna was enjoying. The whole city came out to watch the fight. Their king and Bhima saying, such a good fight. You know, when it's a good fight, then we really enjoy it. If it's not a good fight, we don't really. When your kids, when you went to school, sometimes were there fights in their playground? Did it happen?
Yes.
Yeah. When I was a kid, it used to happen. And then what happens when there's a fight in the playground?
A lot of people crowd around.
Yeah, the whole school comes. I remember when I was in primary school, there was a fight, like everyone would come. Yeah, 100 kids come, and like all around. Yeah, and some are going for this one, some are going for that one. And then, yeah, one of my teachers, she used to let the fights go on. She wouldn't stop it. She'd just let it go. Right? And then when it's finished, then she'd come in and say, okay, that's enough. So we like the battle. That's why, you know, everyone's crazy about the cricket or the soccer or the football or whatever it is, because they like that competition. So it's in Krishna. So then when he comes to the material world, even he comes here to enjoy that competition. He likes the battle. There's a great satisfaction in the battle. So, any points?
Is that why the devotees have the kulacharam eating competition?
Yeah. Yeah. They had one here, was it 92 or 96? 92, I think. They had one out here in the courtyard. And he's holding a Sridhar Swami, won it. Remember Sridhar Swami? Yeah, he won the competition. They had like 36 or something. I wasn't there, I would have beaten him.
Janananda Maharaj, when he's done 52.
Who was that?
Janananda Maharaj.
52?
52.
Okay.
Sure, nothing in your standards, Dad.
Yeah, 52 is impressive. 52 is impressive. So yeah, that's competition. Devotees like to compete.
Is that why they also have this Christmas marathon competitions, book distribution competitions?
Yeah, Prabhupada used to set the competitions up. Make everyone compete, temples and devotees and devotees. Because it's natural, we like to compete. So. But if the other devotee or the other temple wins, we don't feel
envious.
Yeah. Just like back in the 1970s, Melbourne Temple versus Sydney Temple, when Prabhupada was on the planet, they had a book distribution marathon. I think Melbourne won. I can't remember. It was one of the temples. I think Melbourne won. And Sydney had a new Sankirtan van, like a new van they brought to take the devotees out. And because Melbourne won, they donated the van to them. You know, no envy. You're better than us. You deserve the van. So then they sent it. Okay. That's the mood of the devotees. We compete, but not envious. Not to be. You know, if we like to win, but if we get beaten, then that is satisfying. But I will not fight with you, Krishna, for you are a coward. Your strength abandoned you in the midst of battle, and you fled your own capital of Mathura to take shelter in the sea. As for this one, Arjuna, he is not as old as I, nor is he very strong. Since he is no match for me, he should not be the contender. Bhima, however, is as strong as I am. Having said this, Jarasandha offered Bhima saying, a huge club, took up another himself, and went outside the city. So this shows how chivalrous real Kshatriyas are. There were two clubs. He gave him the better one or the bigger one. Right? And then he went out, so he said, and as they were walking out, he said, I've given you the bigger club, the better club. He said, oh, I've got a smaller one. But he said, I give it to you because I know I will win anyway. Right? That's real Kshatriya spirit. That's what we call in sport, we call it sportsmanship.
Why didn't he want to fight with Krishna? I mean, apart from him saying that he was a coward and he would run away.
Krishna and Arjuna were smaller than Bhima and Jarasandha. So it's like, say, you know, if you go into a fight, and it's like one guy's a lot bigger and one guy's a lot smaller. The bigger guy says, yeah, I don't want to fight you, you're just not big enough to fight. So it was like, that was his mood.
Wasn't it a challenge to him in the factors and, like, he thought it wouldn't be a challenge?
Yeah, it's like, you know, fighting someone.
He's trying to insult Krishna.
Yeah, he's insulting Krishna.
You know, the Lord had done that in certain
years.
Yes.
Why would he run away, though?
That was a pastime as well. You have to read the Krishna book.
Oh,
yeah. That pastime's in there. So that's the real chivalry of a... And we should be like that as well. As devotees, we like to give the facility to the other devotees. We don't like to keep the facility ourselves. You know, there's a better thing and a less thing, then, you know, you give the better thing to the devotees. Yeah. It's like, you know, you won't keep like the bigger piece of Mahaprasad for yourself. Or maybe you will. But devotees think like that. Oh, I'll give the better piece to the other person, the other devotee. So this is culture. So Jarasandha is thinking like that. The two heroes thus began battling each other on the level fighting grounds outside the city. Maddened with the fury of combat, they struck each other with their lightning bolt-like clubs. As they skillfully circled left and right, like actors dancing on a stage, the fight presented a magnificent spectacle. When Jarasandha and Bhimasen's clubs loudly collided, O king, the sound was like the impact of the big tusks of two fighting elephants, or the crash of a thunderbolt in a flashing electrical storm. They swung their clubs at each other with such speed and force that as the clubs struck their shoulders, hips, feet, hands, thighs, and collarbones, the weapons were crushed and broken like branches of arca trees, with which two enraged elephants furiously attack each other. Their clubs thus ruined, those great heroes among men angrily pummeled each other with their iron hard fists. As they slapped each other, the sound resembled the crash of elephants colliding or harsh thunderclaps. So this is chivalry. Chivalry means you will only fight with equals. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they came to that agreement before the battle began. No? Bhishma, he laid out the... because he was the senior most on the battlefield. So Bhishma laid out the guidelines for the fight for both sides. And everyone had to agree. He said, you can only fight with equals. If someone is a foot soldier and you're in a chariot, you can't fight with them. You have to fight with someone who's equal. Chariot versus chariot, or horse versus horse, or elephant versus elephant, or like that. It cannot be unequal.
So then, how could Bhishma kill thousands and thousands of soldiers with the Pandava armies?
Because the foot soldiers would protect the chariots, so they were considered like part of their phalanx or army.
And there was no one equal to Bhishma on the other side.
Yeah, but it means he had to fight equally. That's what it means. It doesn't mean, you know, obviously he's more powerful, but it means that he would only fight with equals. If someone was challenging him with equal force, then he would fight. So that's the position. So as soon as the clubs were broken, they both went to... It's not like, you know, one person has a club, the other person is barehanded, so he starts using the club. No, you cannot do that.
Wasn't it only one-on-one fights as well? No, circling around one person and target them out.
Yeah, I mean, they killed Abhimanyu unfairly, Arjuna's son. You know, there's like seven Maharathis surrounded him. But that, so that was not chivalrous. Also, when Karna was killed, Krishna said to Arjuna, shoot him. He was unarmed. You know, his chariot went into the mud, into the... So he got off the chariot and he's lifting the chariot out. Right? And then Krishna said, kill him now. And Arjuna said, I can't. He's not armed. And Krishna said, no, he does not deserve a glorious death. Kill him now. And then Arjuna took his head. So as devotees, we should always be moral. One of the 12 aims of Shastric study is?
Academic and moral integrity.
Yeah, academic and moral integrity. You know, we should act morally. We should act properly, especially among the devotees. Just like I was talking to my wife today, she's teaching her child protection course in one of the other temples, and then we're speaking today. And she said that one case where one devotee, this devotee is a liar, trying to harm the other devotees by even taking them to court and things like that. So you actually can't call a person like that a devotee. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that people will take birth in the Hare Krishna movement who are agents of Kali. He says that. He said people will enter into our movement who are agents of Kali. They're just there to cause quarrel. So, you know, people are like that. There are some people like that. But we should not be like that. That's the point. We should always have moral integrity. Always treat the devotees properly. If you don't treat the devotees properly, you will suffer. You have to be very careful how you treat devotees. So, any points?
Just going back to the Kurukshetra, you said that that Kshatriyas like to fight and all. And when Arjuna vowed to kill some general in the army but before sunset, wasn't he hiding himself behind an army layer and not fighting at all?
Yeah.
Jayadrava.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, he was. That's not Kshatriya spirit.
Wasn't he considered one anyway?
Yeah, he's a Kshatriya. But they wanted to kill... It was like they all got together as a team. And they said the only way we can defeat Arjuna is if he enters into fire. So we'll keep you at the back. And if he can't get to you by the end of the day, he'll have to kill himself entering into the fire. He said, really, that's one of the only ways we can kill him because he's too powerful. So they, as a team, they made that decision. It was like a tactic. And then, so it wasn't very brave. But yeah, it was a tactic. As they thus fought, this contest between opponents of equal training, strength, and stamina reached no conclusion, and so they kept on fighting, O King, without any let-up. So it says there that they were fighting 27 days, and on the 28th day, then Krishna indicated how to kill him. Now, Prabhupada points out in the Krishna book, at the end of the day, right, when the sun went down and stopped fighting, Jarasandha would say, that was a good fight. He would say, now come and have prasadam. And then they'd all go in, they'd take bath, and then they'd sit down and they'd have prasad together. Jarasandha would say, you know, you fought very well today. I appreciate your battle. You know, and they would tell stories to each other about that.
So there was really no hard feelings?
No, there were hard feelings. But that was the point is that's culture or etiquette. You know, the culture was so strong, the etiquette was so strong. And Jarasandha, because he's such a powerful king, and he said, now go and take rest. Right? So he'd say, go and take rest, and he'd give them, you know, beautiful facilities. Right? And in the morning, after breakfast, okay, now let's go and fight again. Right? So such a culture is there. It actually says, as one saying, that even when the enemy comes to your home, you should treat him in such a way that he forgets you are enemies. That's not easy to do. But in the Vedic culture, they used to do like that. Any points?
It's a very strange etiquette for people that are fighting with each other with hard feelings.
Yeah, it's not strange, it's cultured. We don't understand because, you know, we don't find it in this day and age. This is culture. This is a different type of person.
I mean, he was giving the enemy compliments. So.
Yeah. That's culture. You fought well today. You know, it was a good fight. That's culture. Okay, so if you look at, like, really good athletes, really good, you're talking about, like, high-class boxers, you know, like Ali.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Ali and Foreman. You know, while they're punching each other, they're speaking to each other. Oh, that was a good shot. You know, or is that all you've got? Like that, you know, it's like a, you know, that's when they get up to that level, that's how they, you know, when they're really powerful. Or, do you watch the UFC?
Yeah.
You know, Khabib and McGregor?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were talking during the actual fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, won't go into details now.
I mean, he attacked the people outside the cage.
That was a different thing. We won't go into details.
Yeah.
This is called Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. UFCs are different.
I mean, they do even fights anyway. They do weight class.
Yeah. Because you're not going to put John Jones against Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Lord Krishna knew the secret of his enemy Jarasandha's birth and death, and also how he had been given life by the demoness Jara. Considering all this, Lord Krishna imparted his special power to Bhima. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee will never perish. When Krishna gives you an order, when your spiritual master or when the senior devotees give you an order, you also get the potency to
execute,
fulfill the order. Right. So Krishna empowered Bhima to kill Jarasandha, because it wasn't easy to kill someone that powerful. They couldn't work out how to kill him. Right. And Krishna gave him the power, you will kill him. So when you get the order, you also get the ability. Having determined how to kill the enemy, the Lord of Infallible Vision made a sign to Bhima by tearing in half a small branch of a tree. Understanding this sign, mighty Bhima, the best of fighters, seized his opponent by the feet and threw him to the ground. Bhima pressed down on one leg with his foot while grabbing Jarasandha's other leg in his hands. And just as a great elephant might break the branch of a tree, Bhima tore Jarasandha apart from the anus upward. The king's subjects then saw him lying in two separate pieces, each with a single leg, thigh, testicle, hip, shoulder, arm, eye, eyebrow and ear, and with half a back and chest. With the death of the Lord of Magadha, a great cry of lamentation arose while Arjuna and Krishna congratulated Bhima by embracing him. The immeasurable Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sustainer and benefactor of all living beings, coronated Jarasandha's son Sahadev as the new ruler of the Magadhas. The Lord then freed all the kings Jarasandha had imprisoned. So, Paritranaya Sadhana. Vinash ripped in two. Sahadev cooperated with Krishna, so Krishna coronated him, made him the king. So if you cooperate with Krishna, everything will be auspicious. If you do not cooperate with Krishna, everything will be... See you tomorrow, Hare Krishna. Please come again.